I was just at Walgreens because I needed to find the right relief for my allergies. You know the symptoms. An itchy nose, watery eyes, sneezing. Luckily, Walgreens has trusted brands like Claritin, so I can find powerful 24-hour non-drowsy relief from both my indoor and outdoor allergies. So, no matter what the season brings, Walgreens is around the corner with the right relief fast. Walgreens. Trusted since 1901. Find great value on Claritin allergy relief products at Walgreens. Use as directed.
Hello and welcome to the Backline Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
I'm great, Carlos, except I'm freezing to death. I traded in my 80-degree beach weather in Florida for below 10 degrees here in Toledo with an inch to 2 inches of snow every night. So this is not a good thing. I'm not a happy camper here. But, hey, how about those Eagles? They scored early and often in the Super Bowl, and Tom Brady and the boys could not keep up. I was surfing through channels Sunday on the TV before the Super Bowl, and I thought I was watching a rerun of Animal House with John Belushi in some kind of drunken frat party thing. It even had a streaker. But all of a sudden, a golf tournament broke out. Who knew? The Waste Management Phoenix Open. Wow, what a party. Hey, Carlos, well, let's talk some golf. The top headlines in golf this week, another playoff in Phoenix, but Phil stole the show. Shubhankar Sharma fires a final round 62 to win on the European Tour. USGA held its annual meeting and elected a new president. Plus, we got lots more golf to talk about. So let's go, Carlos.
Who won the Maybank Championship again? Who was that?
Sharma. I'll leave the first name to you. Shubhankar?
Okay. We'll talk about that later. No problem.
Yeah. I have no clue. I'm just guessing here.
It's Shubhankar. Shubhankar.
Well, I was pretty close.
You were pretty close. That's why I just wanted to.
Shubhankar?
Shubhankar. It's like the. You don't say Bankar, it's Shubhankar.
Okay.
Well, we'll talk about that later. It's Shubhankar.
Okay. I'll leave that up to you. I'm just an old country boy here from Toledo. I don't know very much.
Okay. Shubhankar. Don't worry. But anyway, yeah, you're right. Let's talk a little bit about golf, and we have our VHE as usual, very important guest of the week, and you know him, he's controversial. I mean, everything he says can be taken one way or the other, but he really likes to set some news every time that he talks, and that's Brandel Chamblee, and Fred has an interview with him, so you are going to like what you see there, and I mean what you hear about that. But let's go back right now to what happened this past week on the major tours, the weekend backspin. And Fred, like you said, is the greatest show in golf, and that is the Waste Management Phoenix Open. And something happened. I mean, I saw Ricky Fowler holding the 54-hole lead on Saturday night. John Rahm was there just one behind him. I said, like, oh, this is going to go down like one of those great finishes. I can't wait to see that final hole between Ricky and John. And neither one of them had anything to do with it.
Nope.
What happened?
Nope.
What happened?
But I'm like you. I was thinking the same thing Saturday night. I'm thinking, well, this is going to be Ricky, maybe John Rahm. You know, this could be pretty good on Sunday. But no, but it was still okay. But we did have another playoff in Phoenix for the third consecutive year. The fourth week in a row on the PGA Tour there was a playoff. Standing on the 18th tee on Sunday, Chez Reavie had fallen one stroke down to Gary Woodland after leading most of the day, but Reavie holed a 20-foot birdie putt at the last to force the playoff. Reavy couldn't stay up with a long-hitting Woodland in the playoff, however. He missed the green, made a poor chip, and missed a nearly identical putt he had just made previously to end up tied with Woodland. And the playoff was over quick, so everyone could switch over and watch the Super Bowl and not miss the kickoff. Woodland got the win when Reavy could only manage bogey in the playoff on the first hole. So you talked about Ricky Fowler and John Rahm. Both Ricky and John faltered on Sunday. Ricky blamed a balky putter, but hitting his drive in the water at number 15 and making bogey at the easy par 5 kind of closed the deal on Ricky's chances of winning. He carded a final round 73, fell all the way down to T11. This is becoming an all-too-familiar storyline for Ricky. On the other hand, you know, Tom Watson and Payne Stewart had a multitude of final round collapses before they figured it out, and Sergio didn't win his major until he was 37, so there's a lot of time for Ricky yet, but he needs to start closing these things out like he did the Players a couple of years ago. You know, as we mentioned, I really thought Ricky or John Rahm was going to win this thing, but both of them spit the bit on the back nine. I do love Rahm's intensity, but I think it's affecting his play. He has to learn to calm down a little bit. Rahm made bogeys at 12, 15, and 16, posted an even par 72, ended up tied with Ricky at T11. It was not pretty, and he was slamming clubs all over the place. I have a feeling he is looking at some hefty fines from the PGA Tour headshed. Other big names. Jordan Spieth, remember him? He missed the cut. Justin Thomas went on a bogey spree, and Hideki had to withdraw with an injury. Spieth didn't make any doubles at TPC Scottsdale, but he made too many bogeys and not enough birdies. Shot 72-70 in his first two rounds, missed a cut by a single shot. Thomas had his bad round on Saturday, carded two birdies and an eagle at the par 4 17th on Sunday to fire a 66 and move up nine spots to 217. Defending champion Hideki Matsuyama is the latest injury victim and is out for an extended period with a hand injury. Kuchar was even in contention for a while on Sunday, nearly holing his tee shot on the famous par 3 16th in front of the big crowd. It was tracking, but broke left across the hole and was left sitting inside a couple inches for a tap-in. He drowned his chances for a win when he found the water off the tee at 17 and made bogey. Phil, he brought the star power just like always, made an appearance on the leaderboard to keep fans' attention. The Champions Tour is counting the days until Phil is eligible to move over to the old side and draw fans and attention. Bernhard better win now because Phil is not far away. Phil was in his element, though, missing fairways, hitting spectacular wedges, making phenomenal pars and birdies for his thousands of adoring Arizona fans. It was a love fest in the desert. Ches Reavy uses accurate driving and a new putting technique to hang with the Bombers. He hit 65% of his fairways, 83% of greens regulation, and simply by putting a line on his ball, gained more confidence to finish on the greens. Meanwhile, Woodland hit it more than 20 yards farther than Reavy and hit 80% of greens in regulation, but made a few putts for the win. My question to you, Carlos, is this going to be a banner year finally for Gary Woodland? Do you think it's time?
Well, let me tell you this. I mean, for Woodland, I feel very happy because not only is this his third PGA Tour title, his first since August 2013, but he called last year the hardest of his life. If you might remember, in March of last year, when expecting twins, his wife had a miscarriage and the couple lost a baby, while the other baby was born 10 weeks premature. So he said that last year, mentally, he had gotten off to a great start. His game felt great, but then they dealt with those family issues, and it was really tough for him, and he had to deal with it internally. So right now, I mean, it was very, very emotional to see him holding his baby Jackson, who was the one that survived, and he was fighting back the tears, and he said that that was a miracle and put his life into perspective. It was a long year for him, but he was very happy to be holding him and be where he is today. So definitely I see Gary gaining confidence, and I'm not going to say it's going to be a banner year for him, but he's always been a good athlete. I mean, he always is in great shape, and he has the ability to win. I mean, now it's up to him to see where he goes, but he's definitely a lot farther ahead this year than he was last year, even when he started before all of this happened. So I do expect a very good year from Gary. He's moving from 49th to 41st in the world, so he's safer inside that top 50. So we'll see if he gets another win, but I do expect a very good year from him. Like you said, I mean, I was disappointed not to see either John Ram or Ricky Fowler, but hey, Gary and Chance gave a good show. Matt Kuchar got a huge ovation when he almost on the 16, he almost held it out, make a hole in one there, but hey, he was playing also very good. The lefty, wow, I mean, he birdied at 15. Like you said, he brought down the show. He held from 33 feet there at the stadium 16 and brought down the house. Like you said, he brought the star power.
Birdie. Yeah.
Then he made another birdie at the drivable par 4 17, but then he did that double bogey on the 18, which really took him out.
Yeah.
But he was really playing great, really playing great. So it was a great tournament overall. I mean, we didn't see the big, big stars on the top at the end, but it was a great show and a great tournament to watch as usual. So a very, very good overall.
I got one more thing for you, Carlos, before we leave that. The Waste Management Phoenix Open drew 220,000 on Saturday alone. That's more than most PGA Tour events draw in a week or even over 2 years. You know, John Rahm loves the atmosphere. He even wants to have a little walk-up music at the 16th. You know, like at a baseball game, have a little music when you're getting ready to hit. You know, just like Major League Baseball. So, but my question also, Carlos, is what is your feeling on the Waste Management Phoenix Open? Is it getting a little bit out of hand with this party atmosphere? I mean, they were even shouting obscenities at Ricky Fowler, and he's one of the nicest guys on tour. Everybody likes Ricky. It just seems like it's over the top to me. I think it's like it's been done. Okay, it's too much. Let's, you know, this is a golf tournament, not just a frat party. Do you get that feeling, or is it just my old advancement years coming through here?
You know, I think it's over the top, yes, but because of what we're used to see or expect to see in a golf tournament. But at the same time, this has become what it is right now, and the players know what they're dealing with when they get into this one. So, and most of them even embrace it. Let's put it that way. I mean, some of them on that 16, they start giving gifts. They embrace the fans there in the stadium and try to put on a show. So I think they have embraced that, and they say this is just once a year. We don't see that atmosphere in any other tournament. It's like when you play Davis Cup in tennis, when you just know that you're going to expect the worst from the fans, from the opposing fans, of course, if you're the visiting team. But in this case, I think it's just a show, and it's good for golf as a try to attract people at least to get some awareness. I'm not sure that it's going to make more new golf players at all at that. But hey, whatever brings attention, you never know. I mean, some casual fan might say, hey, I might pick up a club or two. Let me try this thing. It looked good there. I can try it. But as for if it's over the top, yeah, but hey, it's just once a year. And things are changing, Fred, so we have to try to adapt to that as well. So that's how I see it. But anyway,
it's hard for us old guys to do that sometimes, Carlos. But
I know,
but we'll
I know,
try.
I know. We'll try. But anyway, one more thing before I leave that, I forgot to address the fact of what you said about John Rahm. I think I've always said that the greatest competitor in golf is Jordan Spieth, but I am convinced now that the one with the greatest competitive spirit is John Rahm. Even, like you say, I have to agree, he's to his own demise right now, because he misses something. He can miss long putt. Like, he did two tournaments ago, he missed this long putt on the par 5 18 from, like, 40 feet. He missed it, like, 2 inches. And he acted like he missed a 2 feet putt. So, I mean, he definitely needs to control himself. I think that when he does that, he's going to be he's already an amazing player. But imagine if he can control his temperament. I mean, he's going to be number one. I mean, there's no denying on that. It's just going to be when. It's not an if. It's just a when. But if he controls that, oh, man, he's going to be superbly difficult to beat. Hey, let's talk about now the European Tour, where India's Shubhankar Sharma continued to light up the European stage at his final round of 62, secured him his second victory of the season. Sharma started the final round training leaders Jorge Campillo of Spain and South Africa's Dylan Fratelli, who's playing really well. But he hit a flawless 62, including 10 birdies to win by two. The start of the second round saw Campillo and Fratelli leading on 15 under par, 4 shots ahead of December's Joe Burke Open champion. However, the 4-shot cushion was drastically reduced by Sharma as he birdied 5 holes on the front 9 to turn in 31 to be just 1 shot adrift. He would then birdie the 11th, the 13th, and the 14th to take the lead in a tightly fought contest. The Indian began to pull away from the field as he continued his red-hot form with closing birdies on the 17th and 18th. And as a result of his victory, the 21-year-old is now on top of the Race to Dubai standings and has leapt from 193rd in the world to number 72. He was ranked 462 at the start of December. Sharma also qualifies for next month's WGC Mexico Championship, as well as the Open at Carnoustie. Bizarrely, though, in November, Sharma was only left with conditional status after he finished 69th after 6 rounds at the European Tour Q School in Spain. He wasn't set to travel to South Africa to play in the Joburg Open, but decided to in a move that has really changed his career. Less than 2 months on, and Sharma has become one of the hottest prospects in world golf, claiming 2 European Tour wins. I mean, given it's 2 wins in tournaments that there hasn't been a lot of star power, but still, the way that he has done it, it has been really, really good. And speaking on his final round, Sharma said, and I quote him, "I played pretty solid, and it wasn't easy because it was windy. I kept pushing the whole day. I knew I had to make a lot of birdies to catch the leaders. I made a lot of birdies on the front 9 and just continued in the back. I wanted to set a target in my mind and try to achieve it on the 13th. I knew I was somewhere near the leaders, but on 16, I knew I had a 2-shot lead. I told myself if I can make 2 more birdies, that would give me a good chance to win." End of quote. I mean, there you see the attitude that this 21-year-old from India is having. He really has it on so far. Elsewhere, there was a returning form for Lee Westwood, who finished just outside the top 10. His last win came in the 2014 edition of this championship, and he was in contention after 2 rounds, after 62 on Friday. However, 2 consecutive rounds of 70 dented the 44-year-old's title chances as he finished 7 shots adrift off the eventual winner, Sharma. There was also a notable performance from New Zealand's Ryan Fox to produce his best finish on the European Tour, finishing tied for 3rd. The 31-year-old had a brilliant week, which included the first albatross of the 2018 European Tour season on the 534-yard first hole. So speaking on that final round, he said that he was solid, not quite as good as he started little the day before, but he gave himself a bunch of chances. Closed well, but he knew that Shubhankar played some amazing golf out there to shoot 10 under, and that was pretty hard to catch. That third place finish now moves the New Zealander to a career high 95th in the world rankings. But Fred, Shubhankar Sharma really making a name for himself. I saw the highlights of that tournament, and I saw also how he played in the Joburg Open. And I think, I mean, Anirban Lahiri has been the top Indian player for the past few years and the top player to watch there. But I tell you one thing, for what I'm seeing about Shubhankar Sharma, that is the player to watch from India, even more than Anirban Lahiri.
Yeah, Sharma has overtaken Lahiri as the top player from India in the rankings, for sure. You know, I was surprised to see Lee Westwood's name up there. As you mentioned, he fired at 62 in the second round. Is that a good sign? At 44, he's kind of at that awkward age. He's too old for the regular tour and too young yet for the seniors tour. So, but, you know, Lee's still out there traveling around trying to get it done. And did you notice the guy there at T5? Somebody we haven't talked about for a long time. Rio Ishikawa.
You see that?
Yeah.
He's creeping up the leaderboard slowly but surely. I mean, he has been showing up in top 20s, top 10s. So he's slowly but surely coming back. So that's a player definitely to keep an eye on. He was, of course, a great prospect from Japan even before Hideki Matsuyama took over as the best Japan player ever. But Rio is a guy that, you know, he was injured. He had a lot of things going against him. And he definitely, like you say, we haven't been talking much about him, but he's been very silently making good performances.
Let's talk a little bit about the Web.com Tour, Carlos. Scott Langley won the Panama Clara Open on the Web.com Tour. Evidently, he wants his old job back on the PGA Tour. Langley is out of the University of Illinois. He turned professional in 2011 after a very good collegiate career. He was tied for low amateur at the 2011 U.S. Open with Russell Henley, but has not really performed as a professional. Langley's last full season on the PGA Tour was 2015-2016. He made 10 cuts in 22 events, had four top 10 finishes, including he had T11 at over in Puerto Rico back then. You know, Langley finished the season playing the Web.com Tour Finals, then spent the entire 2017 on the Web.com Tour, where he recorded four top 25s and 24 starts, but that was not good enough to earn his PGA Tour card for this year. So Langley's come from behind victory as the largest in tournament history. He surpassed Miguel Angel Carballo's five-stroke record from 2007. You know, this might be a good sign for him. You know, this should be pretty good shape. He moves up to number three on the money list in the top 25 on the web.com. So if he just has some more top tens, you know, play steady the rest of the year, he should be pretty sure of finishing out in the top 25 and getting his card for 2019 and getting back to the PGA Tour, Carlos.
You know, I want to give a shout-out to my countryman, Rafael Campos, who finished the day two strokes behind Langley. He carded his second top-five finish of the 2008 season. He's really there into it in the leaderboards and the Web.com Tour. He finished tied there for fifth with Edward Lord. So, you know, a great showing by him. I'm looking forward to him. We're going to talk a little bit about the Web.com Tour on our main topic today, but he's doing great, and I know him, all that he's going through, and it's great to see him finally living up to all the expectations that everybody in Puerto Rico had about him. So great showing, Rafael. Keep going. I'm looking forward to seeing you earning one of those top 25 cards at the end of the year on the Web.com Tour, and I foresee a win for you before the end of the year. Also, you know, I want to talk about somebody there in that tournament, and it wasn't the sort of finish for Vince Covello that he was looking for on Sunday. A 5 over 77 with a back nine of 42 was the 35-year-old's worst round of the week and left him in 71st place, 19 strokes back of the victorious Scott Langley. But we have to give Covello a pass, though. I mean, no doubt. The Philadelphia area native was a bit distracted by something else that was going on Sunday. I don't remember what it was, but something else had his mind somewhere else, because it's not every year that your favorite team plays in the Super Bowl. Okay, unless your favorite team is the Patriots, right? But when you're starting the day in 55th place and trying to figure out how you're going to watch the big game when you're 4,100 miles away, well, stuff happens. So give Covello credit, though, for having some fun, even in the middle of his disappointing round. Yeah, breaking out the DeSean Jackson jersey on the 18th hole like he did to play that last hole, that is what I call a statement. That is what I call a statement. So he did it. And he was happy, I guess, afterwards, even though he finished in 71st place. Hey, I like this one a lot, what I'm going to talk about, because we talked about last week in our main topic about the gender pay gap, which is an issue that affects women all over the world, right? And the majority of professional sports women are no different. We mentioned that elite-level tennis is an exception rather than the rule. Last year marked a decade since women won the right to equal prize money at Wimbledon, the last of the four major tournaments to adopt that approach. Unsurprisingly, 8 of the 10 highest-paid female athletes in tennis in 2013 were tennis players and women, according to Forbes magazine. Golf is a number of sports yet to redress the balance. But the Oats Vic Open that was played last week at Barwon Heads in Victoria, Australia, is one event where no such disparity exists. The brainchild of Golf of Victoria is the only event of its kind in the world, with men and women playing over the same course on the same week for the exact same share of a $793,000, which is the equivalent to Australian dollars, $1.3 million prize fund, which happens because after failing to attract sponsors to host a women's tournament for 2 decades, Golf Victoria then combined with the men's event in 2012, and the unified version has blossomed ever since. On the women's side, it was Australian Minjee Lee who fired a final round of 6-under par 67 at the 13th Beach Golf Links on Sunday to win the women's Oats Vic Open, the first tournament of the year on the Ladies European Tour. The 21-year-old from Perth birdied a par 518 on the beach course in front of huge crowds for a total of 279, 13-under par, 5 better than 19-year-old rookie Caris Davidson, who closed with a 71. The Scottish-born Queenslander was delighted to finish second in her first tournament as a professional. Another Australian, Hannah Green, bogeyed the last to slip into third place with England's Georgia Hull, who really played very well as well. This was Minjee Lee's 4th win as a professional, following 3 wins on the LPGA from 2015 to 2016. And she added after that, she said, "I don't think I've won at home since the Vic Open, so it's really nice to win in Australia again." The world number 20 began the final round with a one-stroke lead over Davidson, but she was 4-under through 7 holes and had moved 4 strokes clear with a birdie and an eagle on the 4th and 5th holes. From that point on, she was on cruise control. She never gave the other players a chance. She and Davidson both birdied a short 7th, and although Lee dropped a shot at the par 4-8, she put on a clinical display there of control ball striking on the back 9, picking up birdies on the 14, 15, and 18 holes in beautiful sunny conditions there. Her mother and brother, Min Woo, who was playing on the men's side, were both there to celebrate with her. On the men's side, Oats Vic Open being played over the same golf course. They just are playing on alternate tee times with the women. The men, Tasmanian Simon Hawks, won with a birdie on the first extra hole to deny Harrison Endicott from the PGA Tour of Australasia. Hawks finished regulation, played tied for the lead with the New South Welshman Harrison Endicott and 14 under 274 thanks to a birdie on the 72nd hole. It just took one playoff hole for the 29-year-old to record his first victory on the ISPS Handa PGA Tour of Australasia, for which he earned full status this year at qualifying school. It's a career-making moment. I mean, Hawks will now head to Perth for the European Tour and Asia Tour tri-sanctioned ISPS Handa World Super 6 Perth. He will also enjoy playing in Australia's largest tournaments for the next 3 years. So, Fred, I don't know if this is what Michael Wan is having as his brainchild also to try to do with the PGA Tour, but we're seeing here, and it has been growing year by year during Australia, the men and the women can play for the same amount of money, on the same time, on the same place, and they were just putting a show, and that tournament has been growing and growing and growing every year.
Carlos, I can see them doing this on the web.com tour quicker than I can see them doing it on the PGA tour. I really just don't see this happening. Maybe I'm being stupid, but maybe they'll get it done. I know they've been talking about it for a couple of years, and Juan said they're going to get it done, but I could see it being a web.com tour thing with the LPGA tour. But I don't know how. Other than an exhibition, I don't see them doing that at a regular event. I'm sorry,
but
I just don't.
You know what? I think it can happen because what they are talking about is not to go. At the beginning, they were thinking about a full-blown tournament, which is not going to happen because they cannot put so many players to play on one tournament on the same time. That is just not going to happen. Even though if they do it like here, alternate times, there's no time to finish two full fields from the women and the men to play at the same time. But what if you make it less than that? I mean, the equivalent to a full field in the PGA Tour, like half from the men, half from the women, and you start that way, maybe that could work. You know, that I don't know.
But you've already got a full schedule for the PGA Tour. Where are they going to stick this thing? And they're trying to compress everything, you know, prior to football season, prior to September. They're running out of time. And then you've got daylight issues if you try and do it in the late fall or the early spring. And you're not going to put it in the summertime because there's too many big tournaments unless you make it an opposite field event. I don't know how they're going to do it. Somebody smarter than me is going to be looking at it because I don't know where they're going to do it.
We'll see. That's why Michael Wan has had great, superb knowledge of marketing and doing things. That's why he's the commish, maybe the biggest one of all there in the golf. So we'll see. I see it happening. Hopefully it's something like this. The Olds Vic Open is really, really a good show there. I hope we can bring it, even if it's on the web.com tour and maybe with the Symetra tour. Hey, let's start it. Let's just start that and give it a break. Fred, any final words before we go to the four call, the quick previews for this weekend?
No, let's go on with it, Carlos.
Let's go on with it. Then, Fred, the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am is this week. A lot of star power there. Dustin, Rory, John Rahm, Jordan Spieth, tell us all about it.
Yeah, it is a fairly strong field this week. And, of course, the tour heads back to Pebble Beach. You got visions of Bing Crosby, Jack Nicklaus, Marco Marin, Tom Watson dancing through our heads when we think of the great course by the Pacific Ocean. It's probably the most scenic of all the courses in the country. You got the waves crashing over the retaining wall on the 18th as the players try to keep from hitting their drives behind the tree or in the ocean. A fairly strong field is going to tee it up this week. Rory McIlroy, remember him? He's going to make his first U.S. appearance of the year this week. Defending champion Jordan Spieth is going to try to correct his missed cut from last week. Dustin Johnson, Adam Scott, Jason Day, Pat Perez, Patrick Reed, and, of course, Phil Mickelson give the field a quality mix. Plus, there's a few old guys around here and there with their amateur partners. Ernie Els, Peter Jacobson, Vijay Singh, David Duval, Padraig Harrington, and Steve Stricker. In all, 15 of the top 30 in the current FedEx Cup standings, including 6 of the top 10, are in the field. 8 of the 12 different winners on the PGA Tour so far this year. 5 of the top 10 in the official world golf ranking. 7 past AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am champions. It should be entertaining as always. The weather can be a little dicey in Northern California this time of year, but it looks like it's going to be sunny in mid-60s all week, so they should have good weather. It's unique because they play 3 different golf courses, Monterey Peninsula Country Club, Spyglass, and Pebble Beach on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Before finishing off at Pebble on Sunday, they cut after 54 holes. It's limited. Sunday round is limited to the 60 low 60 pros and the 25 low pro-am teams. This is a little bigger than normal purse. It's $7.4 million with $1.33 going to the winner. PGA Tour Live has their coverage beginning at 11 a.m. on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Golf Channel has the coverage both Thursday and Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. And then Golf Channel has additional early lead-in coverage on Saturday from 2 to 3:30 and on Sunday from 1 to 2:45. CBS has a call on the weekend, 4 to 7 on Saturday, and 3 to 6:30 for the final round on Sunday, Carlos.
And just to talk a little bit about Rory McIlroy, this is not only his first play here on the state this year, his first appearance at the AT&T Pebble Pro Beach Am. He has never played this tournament before. He's going to be the second tournament
this year. I thought he played there with his dad years ago. I thought he played there with Jerry. He didn't?
No, he didn't. No, this is the first time he's actually playing the Pro Beach Am. So it's a first for Rory. It's the second time that we're going to see the world top three, Dustin Johnson, John Rahm, and Jordan Spieth, playing in the same tournament. Like you mentioned, also Jason Day. This is a pack, very star-studded field. Phil Mickelson has won three times here. He's playing for the 23rd time. The only year that he missed it was in 1994. Since 1994 was in 2015 when his children were on spring break. You might all remember that he gotta stay home. So that's the only time he has won it three times. Looking forward to see him play well. He always plays well here at Pebble Beach. Adam Scott, for the first time since 2010, the year that Pebble Beach hosted the U.S. Open, Peter Jacobson playing it for the first time in 10 years. You might remember he won here in 1995. So one important thing to look for and that I'm looking forward to is that right now the PGA Tour has gone four consecutive weeks with a sudden death playoff. But Pebble Beach hasn't had a playoff since 2008, which was when Steve Lowry defeated Vijay Singh. So would it become another sudden death playoff? That would be awesome to see everybody bump it there on that par 518 to try to see who wins in a playoff. If that would be happening, it would be a great finish there at Pebble Beach. Hey, on the European Tour, the ISPS Handa World Super Perth, Super 6 Perth, is going to be played at the Lake Carinop Country Club in Perth, Australia. That is a course that boasts 70,143 yards and plays at a par 72. The defending champion is Brett Rumford for a purse of $1.75 million Australian dollars. Last tournament, as we already talked about, Shubhankar Sharma won the Maybank Championship, and he's the Race to Dubai leader. This tournament features 54 holes of stroke play, and then 24 men, six-hole match plays on Sunday. So it's one of this new format tournaments that Keith Pelly has brought into the European Tour. Shubhankar Sharma will be playing. He's the only two-time winner right now on the European Tour this season and the Race to Dubai leader. Tyrrell Hatton of England is the only player from the top 20 in the world who's playing. The field also includes Lee Westwood, former Masters champion, Danny Willett, and Thorbjørn Olsen. Robert Allenby, Nico Hearn, and Peter Leonard are part of the Australian contingent. Chase Koepka, who's the younger brother of U.S. Open champion Brooks Koepka, who's on the mend right now, is playing. Rumford last year led after each round of stroke play and was medalist by five shots. He won the final match 2-1 over Thai teenager Basharakon Watmai. The European Tour returns next to the Middle East for two events in Oman and Qatar. The NBO Oman Open played at the Al Mujj Golf Club in Muscat, Oman will be next. If you want to watch this on television, Wednesday through Friday will be 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. on Golf Channel, and Fred Saturday would be 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. on the Golf Channel.
Carlos, I got a question. Do they pay the medalist after stroke play, or do they only pay on the after match play?
No, after the match play. It's whoever is the medalist at the end.
Okay, so medalist after 54 holes doesn't make anything.
No. It's just go through the 24.
Yeah, just for seeing. Okay. Champions Tour down in Florida, Boca Raton Championship. After a couple of weeks off, they get back into action. We got Miguel Angel Jimenez in the field. The golf course is the old course at Broken Sound. It's par 72, 6,800 yards, designed by Joe Lee, 1978, updated by Gene Bates in 2004. You got 1.6 mil going to the winner, going to the total purse. The winner gets $240,000 of that. Golf Channel is going to have all the coverage. This is the 12th year for the Boca Raton Championship. It's the first field event, first full field event of the season. 78 players will be there looking for a fast start. Scotty McCarron, defending champion, made an eagle on the last hole last year to get the win. You got eight other past champions in the field: Paul Goitis, Corey Pavin, Tom Lehman, Bernhard Langer, who it's a home game for him. He actually resides in Boca Raton. Here's something. We got Charlie Reimer from the Golf Channel making his Champions Tour debut at Boca Raton this week. So, as I mentioned, you can watch it on the Golf Channel noon to 2:30 on Friday, 3:30 to 5:30 on Saturday, and 3 to 5 for the final round on Sunday, Carlos.
Yes, the Chubb Classic played at the Talon Course on the Twin Eagles Golf Club in Naples, Florida, will be the next tournament after this one for the Champions Tour. And let's talk about the Web.com Tour. I don't want to give up too much because that's our main course, our main topic in a little while. But the Club Columbia Championship is going to be played at its usual host course. The Founders Course is a beautiful course in the beautiful Bogota Country Club in Bogota, Colombia. The course yardage of 7,237 yards, placed at a par 71. It's going to have a purse of $700,000 with a winner's share of $126,000. Last time out, Scott Langley won the Panama Championship. The money leader is 19-year-old Sungjae Im. Of the top 30, only four are not playing, and of the 12-25, three are not playing. Only the 28th after that is not playing. There's 15 countries represented here. This is actually the last one that is, well, the second to last that we played outside of the U.S. for the Web.com Tour. They played in Latin America this first tournament, and this one has become one of the most important ones in Latin America right now. So it really gives us a chance for the Latin American players to play. Four Colombians are going to be there, including Sebastian Munoz, who played on the PGA Tour during the 2016-17 season. So it's going to be an interesting tournament. Everybody's still playing there. Of the top players, it's just a start. This is just a fourth tournament of the season on the Web.com Tour. The next tournament will be in a month from now. They're going to take a month off on March 8th. El Bosque Mexico Championship by NOAA will be played in El Bosque Country Club in León, Guanajuato, Mexico. With that, we wrap up our four call. And Fred, you have a word for us from Boyne.
Absolutely. Boyne Resort in northern Michigan features 10 golf courses at three different locations around Petoskey, Michigan. You might ask, why are we talking about Boyne Golf right now up in northern Michigan when there's about 2 feet of snow up there and the temperature is in the teens? Well, now's the perfect time to book your trip up there. The Highlands, the Mountain, and the Bay Harbor clubs all are within a short driving distance of each other. You can stay in one location and add rounds at the other locations to round out your trip. Whatever courses you play, do not miss a chance to play the Bay Harbor Club with its gorgeous views of Little Traverse Bay. If you want five-star accommodations, stay at the highly acclaimed Bay Harbor Inn and enjoy treatment normally reserved for royalty. Even though it's winter, now's the perfect time to take advantage of their early discounts. Book your summer golf trip to northern Michigan right now. Go to boyne.com/golf. Get it done. Carlos, back to you.
And with that, we wrap up our four golf quick previews of this weekend's action. Now we're going to move to the par five news. And Fred, you're going to talk to us a lot about what happened there on the USGA annual meeting. including there's a new elected position. So tell us all about it.
Yeah, you're going to want to take a little break. You might want to take a nap, set your alarm here or something, because I got a lot of stuff here, Carlos. Other than the Super Bowl and the Waste Management Phoenix Open, the biggest news in golf happened at the USGA Annual Meeting in Miami last week. Mark Newell was elected to replace Deanna Murphy to a one-year term, and he sounds aware that the USGA's focus on sustainability is going to be pressured by distance increases. When you combine distance with the effect of the size of golf courses on the economics of the facilities, on the environmental issues that come from that, and in some cases, on the effect on just the enjoyment of golfers, it's something we need to look hard at. That's what we're planning to do. We have been, and we're going to be focused on that situation and how we can deal with it. There's going to be a report issued at the end of February to reveal a joint USGA and the RNA distance study update. I can tell you pretty much what that's going to tell you right now, Carlos. I don't need to wait for what they're going to say. One of Mike Davis's hand-picked additions to the executive committee, Nick Price, was also confirmed as a member of the committee, of the executive committee at the meeting, which further cements the USGA's war on distance, and they're blaming the golf ball. In addition to the bigger picture issues, there are other practical matters the governing body is preparing to address. Among Saturday's announcements was the formal transition of the USGA Members Program established in 1975 into a newly formed USGA Foundation, which is charged with helping increase the ability for golfers to invest and contribute financially to the game. In conjunction, the association is launching a multi-year campaign driving golf forward. You're going to be hearing a lot about this. There's going to be a lot of PSAs on television about it. It's going to help fund innovation and research while boosting inclusivity within the sport. The new president, Mark Newell of McLean, Virginia, is the 65th president of the USGA. The election took place at the association's annual meeting. Newell will lead the 15-member volunteer USGA Executive Committee, which provides strategic direction and oversight to the association's full-time management staff, which is headed up by Mike Davis. Newell said, "I'm grateful for the opportunity to serve the game of golf as USGA president and to champion our staff's work to lead, grow, and sustain our sport. We are in an exciting time in golf's evolution, and our collective focus on ensuring its future has never been stronger." Newell has put in 8 years on the executive committee. He's chaired the Rules of Golf Committee since 2013. He's been a leading force behind the joint initiative with the RNA to modernize the rules of golf. He also chaired the USGA Handicap Committee and spent 4 years as co-chair of the USGA and the RNA initiative that led to the development of the World Handicap System, which is scheduled to debut in 2020. The Drive It Forward Foundation, that is, as I mentioned, is going to help fund innovation research. Mike Davis said about that, "The health and future of golf are fueled by strong leadership, resources, and meaningful initiatives. This campaign will support and develop programs that positively impact our game and create new opportunities for golf to grow and endure. The campaign will help fund new innovation and research designed to improve the golfer experience." I thought the shark experience did that, helped golfer experience, you know, with all that TV and stuff on the carts, but evidently not. "And help golf facilities reduce their reliance on critical resources such as water, nutrients, chemicals, and energy by 25% by 2025. That's a lot. If you're going to cut back on chemicals and all that stuff, the water you need by 2025, that's a lot. The planned increases in investment include the development of global forums to better connect the worldwide golf community and produce positive collaborative change. USGA also had a long-term goal of boosting inclusivity in the sport through increases in participation by juniors, as well as broadly supporting accessibility and adaptive golf, improving golfer experiences in the game. You know, along that line, I just talked to Rich O'Brien today. We had on the show, and Rich is very involved in down in the Carolinas and PGA Hope and adaptive golf, and he's going to be working more closely with the PGA in developing adaptive golf. He's going to be working with the Paralympics for golf, the American team. So, you know, that's a very important part of golf right now, is bringing physically challenged, physically limited people into the game and using it as therapy. And we're going to have Rich on the show. We'll be talking about that more in the future. But the USGA is also looking at this. Efforts that provide workplace training and meaningful pathways to employment for new leaders in the golf industry. They've got some internship programs, some learning science for golf, some other things that they're working on. The USGA I'm talking about here. And they're also, you know, they have a great – they're in Far Hills. They have a great library there where they have preserved a lot of golf's historical record, artifacts and data. You know, it requires investments in technology to get this stuff and put it on the computer and all this stuff. So it does take money. I understand that. The largest and most comprehensive collection of the game's stories is housed at the USGA Golf Museum, providing researchers and visitors with access to authoritative information and extensive collections. The program intends to build programs and resources that will inspire a deep appreciation of the game's rich history. So, kind of to wrap this up, one more thing, I guess the Driving Forward provides an opportunity to play a direct role in the future of golf and invest in important programs that will make a difference. So, the other thing that they talked about there at the end of the meeting, they rolled out the new trophy and the particulars for the first ever U.S. Senior Women's Open. You know, last year we had the first ever senior LPGA championship over here at French Lick. They'll have the second one there this year. But this year will be the first ever U.S. Senior Women's Open. They display the trophy. Very nice. It's going to be open. The U.S. Senior Women's Open is going to be open to any professional or amateur golfer who is 50 years of age as of July 12th, have a handicap of not exceeding 7.4. The field will include 120 players who will earn entry into the walking-only championship via sectional qualifying at the sites around the country. It's going to be on July 12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th, four rounds, and it's going to be at the Chicago Golf Club, which is one of the five founding clubs of the USGA and the oldest golf club in the U.S. in continuous use at the same location. There were other clubs that were older, but they were closed down or moved to another location. So Chicago Golf Club has the distinction of being the oldest continuous run. It was founded in 1893 by Charles Blair McDonald, C.B. McDonald, one of golf's real founders here in the country. He won the inaugural U.S. Amateur in 1895. And the course, Chicago Club, was renovated by Seth Rayner in 1923 and remains pretty much the same today as when Rayner got done with. So, Carlos, that's a lot of stuff from the USGA annual meeting last week. I hope I didn't bore you too much. I hope you're still awake.
What? Oh, you're done? Oh, okay. No. Just kidding. Hey, you know, in taking the job of USGA president and setting out to work alongside executive director and CEO Mike Davis, Mark Newell, he really has no shortage of items on his to-do list. And a few to note to me, which are, number one, oversee the continued rollout of the modernized rules of golf, which you talk about. Unveil the details of the new world handicap system, and examine the distance issue that faces the game. Regarding the first two items, arguably, no one is better suited to handle them than him. I mean, he's a retired lawyer. From, like you mentioned, from McLean, Virginia, that has been a member of the USGA XCOM since 2010 and chaired the Rules of Golf Committee since 2013. And in those roles, Newell, who casual golf fans might recognize as the official who walked with Dustin Johnson on Sunday at the 2016 U.S. Open. He has been definitely intimately involved in both projects since their inceptions earlier in the decade. But now, for the third, he confirmed that he's ready to continue that examination of the distance debate, but acknowledging there's concerns on the slow creep of distance over the past decade. But I ask you, do you think he's going to go that route of pulling it back like Mike Davis has said, or where do you see him going on that?
Oh, I think he's already in lockstep. This report's going to come out. They're going to say that the ball's traveling too far. It's not meant to do that. We're relegating the classic golf courses to pitch and putts, you know, even at 7,400 yards, and that just can't happen. And they're gonna roll back the ball for major championships, which they're involved in. You know, the R&A with the Open Championship in Scotland, Great Britain, and then I'm pretty sure the USGA is going to roll it back for the U.S. Open. And probably make it, but the PGA Tour, the PGA have to adopt it for the other tournaments. So, but they usually go along with whatever the USGA says now, and I'm pretty sure they're going to, because the PGA Tour has been making noise like they feel the ball's too long, and then you got guys like Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player and all these other guys saying, and Tiger Woods even saying it also. So. I think Newell's going to be right in lockstep with Mike Davis. I think they're probably one and the same. I don't think there's any difference of opinion there, and I'm pretty sure this report is going to just confirm what they wanted to say.
Amen to that. Roll it back. Roll it back. Roll it back. Anyway, I know you're against it. I'm all for it. So let's do it tomorrow. Let's sign it. Do that report right now.
I think it's fraught with problems, Carlos. Once you see how it works, I don't think people are going to like it.
They're going to make golf.
Yeah,
again. It's going to be awesome.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm sure about that. You're going to have to prove it to me.
You'll see it. You'll see it. Seeing is believing what they say, right? Doubting.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, let's talk about one of my favorite female players, and she's going to become maybe my favorite player once she becomes a professional. Breaking records is becoming quite a habit for Ireland's Leona Maguire, as she continues her dominant college golf career in the U.S. before turning pro. However, her latest record could be the most historic of all, given the fact that it may well never be broken. When the latest Women's World Amateur Golf Rankings were published on Wednesday, Maguire was ranked number one for the 131st time in her career, breaking the previous record held by New Zealander Lydia Ko. But this is where it gets interesting, as Maguire is quite unusual in the women's amateur game. At 23 years old, she's essentially a veteran of the circuit, with most players turning pro before they haven't even reached their 20th birthday. Previous record holder Ko, for instance, turned pro when she was just 16 in 2013 and has gone on to win two majors since. Due to the fact that players are turning pro at a younger and younger age all the time, meaning they don't spend too much time on the amateur circuit, Maguire's 131-week record, which will only continue to extend, may well never be broken. Maguire has had the chance to turn pro on a number of occasions, including after she won College Player of the Year in her first year at Duke University, but she has turned it down each time, opting instead to finish her degree in psychology. In both 2016 and 17, she advanced to the final stage of the LPGA Tour qualifying school, but turned down the chance to play so that in the event of her securing her card, she wouldn't have to face the decision on whether or not to leave the amateur ranks. Last year, the Cavan native claimed 5 wins on the U.S. collegiate circuit and topped it off by taking the Annika Award for the best golfer of the year in American college women's golf, and in doing so, became the only player ever to win the award twice. However, her biggest win came at the British Amateur Championship at Pyland Kenfig, which helped her to extend her lead at the summit of the rankings. Maguire first held the top ranking from May 2015 to May 2016, a span of 52 weeks, until she was overtaken by American Hannah O'Sullivan for 12 weeks that summer. Maguire took the number one spot back in August 2016 and has held it for 79 consecutive weeks ever since. She will be finishing her degree in May and will then decide whether to remain amateur to play in her fourth Curtis Cup in June or to join the professional ranks where she will have status on the Symetra Tour, which is the secondary women's circuit in America. Fred, Leona Maguire is definitely a breed on her own. I mean, she's just unique on the way that she has kept herself an amateur so far. She's got all the tools to be playing professional already. I can't wait for her to really become a pro and start playing with the big girls there. And she really is a great person, great player, and I'm amazed at all that she has done already, and all that she has done, really, she has deserved it.
Yeah, you know, it is unusual that the young women don't, you know, they just don't stay amateurs that long anymore. So they just kind of, but you break anything that has Lydia Ko's name on it, you've done something pretty amazing, because Lydia Ko is one of the greatest talents that's come along in the last 20 years. So that's something in itself. And it's going to extend because she's got another 4 months of college yet golf to play, you know, if they get into the tournament and stuff like that. And like you say, if she hangs around for the Curtis Cup, which she may indeed do. So, you know, and I, as I mentioned before, I had a nice chat with her mother when the Marathon Classic was in town, and I was sitting on the range watching Leona hit balls, and her mother was sitting there, and she and her husband are both teachers. Leona's parents are both teachers, and so they value, you know, they put the value of education with Leona, and so she wanted to stay and get her degree, and she just enjoyed being in college. So she doesn't have the pressure to have to move on. So it's good stuff. Hey, you know, Tom Doak doesn't lose out on much, but evidently Michael Jordan didn't decided Tom was not going to be the guy to do his new course down at Hobie Sound in Florida. Bobby Wade is going to be the designer. Michael is designing this new golf course, and the rumor was that Doak had the inside track, but evidently that got changed. The club will be called Grove XXIII. That's in reference to his Aaronis' number 23 jersey that he wore during the Chicago Bulls dynasty years. The course is kind of going to be an answer to Jack Nicklaus's Bears Club down there in the southeastern Florida area. It's going to be a par 72 with tees ranging from 5,400 yards all the way up to 7,400 yards. Wade is excited about finding a way to challenge players with bunkers planned deep into the fairway landing area, some 330 to 340 yards off the back tees. That's not landing areas for me, Carlos. I got to clear those on my second shot. Plus, he is exploring various angles and sight lines to get into the golfers' heads. Wade said, knowing the caliber of membership and Michael's passion for golf, we are designing a forward-thinking, progressive layout. Golf course architects are in the best position to address how technology has changed strategic design. This project is an opportunity to update how architects provide all players with a fun and interesting challenge. It will be a course for tomorrow, a course with a refined edge. Wade is living on site through the duration of construction in order to personally shape features and supervise the work. The exclusive members-only course is set to open in 2019, and Carlos, unless you've got a pocket full of money, don't bother applying for membership.
You mean to tell me that we, us normal guys, cannot do that? No?
I doubt it. Unless you might win the lottery or something tonight.
I was already planning, but now that you say that, I'm all depressed right now. I'm going to be depressed.
Yep.
Anyway, hey, The European Tour and Keith Pelly have now completed the transition from the European Senior Tour to the State Shore Tour, marking an exciting new chapter in their history. Last month, State Shore, who issues the UK's leading travel insurance provider, became the first ever title sponsor of the European Senior Tour, which will be renamed the State Shore Tour in this landmark golf partnership. The 10-year agreement, 10-year agreement, will lead to a rebranding of the European Senior Tour, including all physical and media assets, and includes the incorporation of a new headline event, the State Shore PGA Seniors Championship. The deal also caps off a very successful year for State Shore, which last week was awarded the gold in the Best Travel Insurance Provider category at the British Travel Awards, the latest in a succession of wins for the company. Continuing to innovate when providing specialist travel insurance for over 50s, Stature acquired insurance company Avanti in August of 2017, cementing its position as a leader in the market. The deal also includes the launch of a new Stature membership program, offering discounts and benefits on a range of travel insurance and golf insurance packages. Members will also get a chance to access tickets at State Shore Tour tournaments, pro-am playing places, signed merchandise, and discounts to other European Tour events. They just announced their schedule, and their year starts with the qualifying school, which is being played right now in Portugal, and the season properly gets underway in the United Arab Emirates in March as the Sharjah Senior Golf Masters, presented by Shurqua, becomes the first of a minimum of 19 events in their 2018 schedule. One of the highlights of the year will undoubtedly be the Senior Open presented by Rolex, as we watch golf's superstars 50 and over take the old course at St. Andrews for the first time in the championship's history. They are also delighted to welcome back the PGA Seniors Championship back to their schedule, with State Shore taking on their title sponsorship of this prestigious event. Overall, a total of 4 new tournaments have been added to the State Shore Tour's roster. In addition to its new headline event, the State Shore PGA Seniors Championship, the State Shore Tour has added the Russian Open Golf Championship, the Shipko Masters in Denmark, and the Costa Blanca Senior Golf Masters held in Spain. Fred, the European Senior Tour has been really an unknown tour. And even Kieran, when he has been here, has said that it's like just a tour for the seniors to just go around and play, other than just a real tour. It really had like 13 events only, and now they're going to 19. I tell you, the first time that they have gotten, how can you get a sponsorship for 10 years to a tour like that? I have to take my hat off to Keith Pelly. I mean, he continues to move the needle, make everything happen, get sponsorship, get to go his way. Even in a tournament tour that practically has been unknown, that is something amazing.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we talk about Michael Wan, but Keith Pelly just keeps raising the bar with the European Tour. So, you know, the PGA Tour guys, Jay Monahan, those guys better take notice, because Pelly is really working it. He's trying pretty much everything that could possibly be done. And, the Senior Tour in Europe, it's been nothing. So I missed this story, Carlos, so good get on this. Glad you got that in there. That's good stuff. Hey, next up, close hours. You know, we have to talk about Tiger Woods a little bit. He's not playing this week, but guess what? He's playing next week, right? So we're all excited, okay? He's also doing his design business, and they're still talking about this thing in Chicago. But, man, they're up to some gigantic dollars now. So Chicago Park District continues to refine and update a proposed design to merge 2 current golf courses in downtown Jackson Park and South Shore Golf Course. Mark Rolfing, Tiger Woods, Mike Kaiser, and Barack Obama have all had a hand in the project, which could be a future host of a PGA Tour event if it happens in downtown Chicago. That would be something. Community concerns were the reason for some revisions, and the overall cost is still very much an issue. Yes, it is. For more than a year, there's been a push to transform the two golf courses into a PGA Tour-worthy course. Constructing the new course would cost about $30 million. $30 million. That's just to construct the course. It's going to take another $30 million to make infrastructure improvements. So at a public hearing, officials said much of that money is going to come from private donations. Don't believe it. But a firm spending plan was not presented. $60 million for a public golf course facility seems like a lot of cash to me, Carlos. I can do a lot of stuff with $60 million. Matter of fact, if they would call me, I'm pretty sure I can do it for half that, okay? And I could probably even, I'm going to guarantee, I might even do it for less than that. But Bo Welling, who's helping design a course for Woods, said the reason Tiger wants to complete the project is because he sees it as an opportunity to improve a course that serves the public, not just elite athletes. You know, my problem with this, Carlos, is if we build a PGA Tour-worthy facility, who's it going to help? Is it going to – now you're going to have a $140 or $200 green fee course. How's that going to help the local residents? I don't get this thing. You can't put $60 million into something and have it be a $25 muni. Ain't going to happen. Sorry. The guy went on to say, I've never seen Tiger so excited about a project. He is really about meaningful projects that have an impact. It's really about the community. Tiger grew up on golf courses. This is a very special thing for him. With Rolfing, Kaiser, Obama, and Woods involved, I don't know. This thing's probably going to happen. It just seems like a big number of dollars to get this done to me, Carlos. So do you suppose a new golf course project in downtown Chicago will help the crime and murder rate in the Windy City?
No. That's not going to happen. That's not going to change. No. No way. No way. Yeah. Hey.
With that, let's hear a little bit from French Lick.
Are you going to do that now or after the VA?
I'm going to do it now.
No problem. Go ahead.
Then I'll kick it back to you. The French Lick Resort has been serving guests since 1845 when they first came to the area for the soothing waters. It's still one of the very best resorts in the Midwest, maybe in the country. You know, everybody talks about the Greenbrier and all these different places and Pebble Beach. But I'm telling you what, French Lick stands right there with these places. Plus, it has a tremendous history. The West Baden Springs Hotel with its remarkable 200-foot domed atrium was originally built in 1855. It was named the eighth wonder of the world, and it's still just awe-inspiring today. The great Larry Bird put the area on the map with his Hall of Fame basketball career, but the French Lick Resort has always offered the finest service and hospitality to thousands of visitors every year. The French Lick Casino offers popular games of chance, and the resort offers the best cuisine available in any of its several restaurants. Guests receive tender loving care at the spa, plus the resort has two fabulous golf courses. The Donald Ross course first opened in 1917, and Walter Hagen won the 1924 PGA Championship on it. The Pete Dye course sits atop the second highest peak in Indiana and provides views for up to 40 miles. It has hosted numerous big events. The PGA of America held its 2010 PGA National Professional Championship on the course. Plus, it hosted the 2015 Senior PGA Championship. And the Women's Legend Tour recently held the first ever Senior Women's LPGA Championship on the Pete Dye course. The French Lick Resort needs to be added to your bucket list of golf destinations. I guarantee it will become one of your favorites. So to book your stay at French Lick, visit FrenchLick.com. Carlos?
And now we're going to go to our VAG, very important guest of the week. His name is Brendel Chamblee. He wrote one of the most controversial books about past golf swings. which is called The Anatomy of Greatness, Lessons from the Best Golf Swings in History, which professed the lifting of the left foot in the backswing, which took to the task the stack and tilt theory of the golf swing. He tells Blackman Report and Fred about his new book, which will be about the short game and putting from the likes of Walter Travis, Bobby Jones, Ben Crenshaw, and Tiger Woods. Fred, he missed Steve Stricker there. But anyway, Fred, tell us a little bit about what you talked to him about and what we're going to listen right now.
Well, Brad and I had a great chat. He was on the floor at the PGA show, so I taped a little bit of it to use for the show tonight. And he's really excited about his new short game book that'll be coming out. He tracks Tiger's Woods success and talks about when Tiger went on his tear in 99, he became a much better putter by talking with Brent Crenshaw. Crenshaw got his information up through the years, but really it came down from Bobby Jones and Walter Travis gave it to Jones, and Jones became a great player after Travis taught him about putting. So it's really good stuff. If you listen between the lines and hear what he's saying, I really can't wait for the book to come out. I'm really looking forward to it. We'll do a review on it when it does come out. So, and after we listen to the interview, I've got some more things I want to talk about. So go ahead and play it, Carlos, if you would, please. We were talking with Brandel Chambly on the floor of the PGA Golf Show in Orlando, Florida. And Brandel, welcome back to Back Nine Report.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's always nice to come talk to you. I appreciate it. It's an exciting week, isn't it?
You're here at the booth for the Classics of Golf and talking about the book that you've already got out, and I understand you got a new book underway.
I do. You know, the book that came out last year, The Anatomy of Greatness, is just commonalities of the greatest swings of all time, best ball strikers of all time. The new book, I'm almost finished with it. It'll be out at the end of this year, beginning of next year, will be The Commonalities of the Greatest Short Games of All Time, Greatest Putters of All Time, which has been fun. I mean, on full swing, there's plenty written. Plenty. Everybody's written a book on the full swing, it seems like. But there really wasn't that much information out there on the short game. Individual players would either write about their method or teachers would write about the way they teach. There really wasn't a lot of research out there on what the best have done and what they had in common. So from that perspective, it's been eye-opening for me. And then to share that with my readers will be pretty exciting.
Now, have you gone to guys like Stan Utley or some of the other guys and shared ideas and got some thoughts from them of what really maybe needs to go into making a good putting stroke or carry that over to a great chipper?
Sure. I was a groomsman at Stan Utley's wedding, so Stan and I have been best of friends for 40 years. So I've played probably more golf with Stan than anybody. And Brad Faxon is a very good friend of mine. So, yes, I've spent a lot of time talking to them. You know, Ben Crenshaw is a friend of mine. I've talked to Ben as well. But it's interesting just to go back and read. You know, Walter Travis was really the first great putter who wrote beautifully about putting. And Walter Travis shared his ideas with Bobby Jones. There's a before and after with Bobby Jones. It's before he talked to Walter Travis and an after he talked to Walter Travis. He had won only one major championship in the 7 years that he had spent playing the game at the highest level, not professionally, but at the highest level. And then he won 12 more after he talked with Walter Travis. The same ideas that Walter gave to Bobby Jones, Walter gave to Walter Hagen. Walter Travis gave to Walter Hagen. Walter Hagen passed them on to Bobby Locke. And Ben Crenshaw sort of carried those ideas forward with his stroke, and Ben shared them with Tiger Woods. There's also a before and after with Tiger Woods. Before he talked to Ben Crenshaw about his putting stroke, in 1997 and 1998, Tiger Woods was 60th and 147th in putting. He wasn't a good putter. In 1999, after he talked to Ben Crenshaw, a light went on, and Tiger went on to become one of the best putters of all time. And that information passed from Walter Travis to Ben Crenshaw all the way to Tiger Woods will be in the book.
We're definitely going to watch for that. Again, talking to Brandel Chambly, who never fails to maybe stir up a little controversy from time to time, and we're looking forward to your book.
Well, thank you very much. I never intend to stir up controversy. I rather I just I say things that I believe to be true after a lot of research, and sometimes they're provocative, but I never intend them to be. I'm just always looking for things that interest me, and I hope they interest my audience.
Sounds great, Brandon. We'll look forward to it. Thanks again for talking to us today.
My pleasure. Always a pleasure talking to you anytime, Fred.
There you have it. That was Brandon Chambly. And Fred, now after all that, I can't wait. Why does it have to be at the end of the year? Why didn't he say it was going to be like at the middle of the year? I want to get my putting stroke better. What do you have to say about this? I mean, I know you have something to say about right now.
I do have to rant a little bit, Carlos.
You what?
You know,
you what?
I have to rant just a little bit. I after I wrote this up, you know, I sent you a note earlier today. I after I put down some notes here about the interview and got to thinking about it, it just burns me to no end. No one practices chipping and putting, you know, and they can't figure out why they can't score better. It just drives me nuts. When someone asks me how to cut back on three putts, I always answer, become a better chipper. And that just involves practicing it, okay? Anyone can do it. You don't have to be a super athlete. Plus, most golf courses have a chipping or putting green that can be used for free. It doesn't even cost anything. Go out there after dinner instead of laying on the couch and watching TV, Wheel of Fortune, go out and practice a little bit before dark. You know, do some chipping and putting. Ask many of the old pros how they got started playing golf, and they'll tell you when they were young, they hung around the putting and chipping green, just spending hours and practicing winning the U.S. Open with a chip and a putt. So I'm going to challenge every one of our listeners, Carlos, to spend at least 45 minutes a week practicing chipping and putting. It would be better if they spent 45 minutes on each, but a minimum of 45 minutes on both each week will do wonders for your scores. You know, I was playing years ago, I was playing with a friend of mine, and he was complaining about his chipping, and I was having a fairly good chipping day, and he said, "How do you hit those chips so cleanly and where you want them every time?" And I just looked at him and said, "Well, how many hours did you spend practicing chipping this week?" And he said, "Oh, when I was playing a lot of golf years ago, I would spend at least 2 days a week." And this is not like the pros. I mean, the pros do it for an hour, hour and a half, at least 3 to 4 days a week. You know, I would make sure that I spent at least 1 day a week, and most weeks 2 days, just working on chipping, because I knew that I didn't hit a lot of greens, and I had to chip from 20 to 30 yards in. It was important. That was an important feature of my game. And I can't believe it should be important for everyone. And if you just go and practice it a little bit, you'd be surprised how much better. Maybe get a couple basic lessons or a couple basic ideas. A lot of people want to try and lift the ball. You can't do that. You have to always hit down through it. You have to nip it. That gets the spin on it. That makes it go where you want it to go. But everybody could improve on their chipping and putting. You would lower your scores by at least 5 strokes around, at least. In 18 holes, most guys are lucky to hit 5 greens. So that means they're chipping 13 times. If you just got it up and down half of those times, that's 6.5 strokes. Right there. Just boom. After I'm even making a long putt once in a while or something, that's just chipping better. So, you know, and then also on the other point I want to make about this, Carlos, if you do this and you get to become a better chipper, believe it or not, the simple act of chipping helps you understand the dynamics of the proper club face at impact, and it's going to help you in your full swing as well. Because the chipping motion is just a small piece of the larger swing. But most importantly, it's through the impact, through the hitting zone. So, we were going out. I was down in Florida a couple weeks ago, and we were going out to play our second 18 of the day, and we had to go back to the by the back end of the range at PGA Village, and there was a lady out there working on her chipping. You never see that. You never see a woman, and this was not a young teenager, you know, working to get to tour or college or high school. This was a middle-aged woman who just wanted to improve her golf game, was out there working on her chipping. I almost ran over to give her a hug and tell her how happy I was to see her out there. I was so impressed with that. Because you never, never, never see that. Just practice chipping this week, people. It'll help your game. You'll have a lot more fun.
You know, I passed by at least three practice range every week, and I have never, ever seen nobody chipping or putting in that area. Everybody's in the driving range. What's wrong with it? I have to agree with you. I mean, I also once got questioned that, why can you hit those so cleanly? I said, because I am so much time off the greens that I have to do it. I just don't make the green. I have to try to perfect that. So if there's the only good thing that I try to do is that. So it's like you say, I mean, everybody is out of the greens. We're not pros. And even the pros are trying to hit the greens, and they don't. So, yes, that is a great thing that you have said. I mean, and let's see. Let's see if we can challenge everybody. We'll keep repeating that. Let's do the chip and putt challenge here on Back Nine Report. I'm going to take it on, and I will let you know, Fred, if I can do that same thing. I can shave some strokes out of it. I'll keep track of it. I'll be the first.
I will guarantee it. I will guarantee it, Carlos.
I'm going to take it.
If you practice once a week, you'll take 5 shots off your game. I guarantee it.
I'm going to take it, and I'll keep track of it. I'm going to do it, and I hope that our listeners also do it. Let's do the chip and putt challenge, practice challenge. And with that, we wrap up our VIG, very important guest of the week, Brandon Chambly. Thank you so much. I mean, you're great to listen to all the time. Thank you for giving us a little bit of your time, and looking forward to reading your book. And definitely, Fred, you and I are going to read it once it's out, and we'll dissect it here as part of our practice range when it comes out. Now let's move to the practice range, where every week Fred and I pick a topic, and each one of us take our own shot at it. And this week we're going to talk about the Web.com Tour. What's going on? What do we expect to be happening? Who to look for? What's happening so far? As you know, the Web.com Tour is that developmental tour for the PGA Tour. Features professional golfers who have either not reached the PGA Tour yet, or who have done so but then failed to win enough FedEx Cup points to stay at that level. And every year, those who are on the top 25 of the money list at the year's end are given PGA Tour memberships for this next season. The Web.com Tour features a lot of tournaments. They start always now on their schedule starts off the U.S. They start in the Latin American sense of the tour. I mean, they start in the Bahamas with 2 tournaments, then they move to Central America, to Panama, then they go to South America with Colombia, and then they go to Mexico before they start playing full-time inside the U.S. And those first tournaments really give a lot of those local players a chance to really try to make it. There's no other way that those players, other than the PGA Tour Latin America, which is like a feeder tour as well for the Web.com Tour. So they get that chance, especially now that they're going to Colombia. We're going to see Sebastian Munoz. We're going to see 3 more Colombians playing there. And in Panama, we saw the same thing. In Bahamas, we saw the same thing. Mexico, we see the same thing. There's already a couple of good players on the Web.com Tour, and Fred is going to talk about him. Of course, I'm just going to mention Carlos Ortiz, who won a few years back in 2014. He was one of those few players that have gotten the automatic promotion to the PGA Tour. If you win 3 times during the year, you get an automatic promotion
to the PGA Tour. After that, the schedule moves into the contiguous states, into Louisiana. They play mainly the East Coast and the central part of the U.S. They rarely venture to the West Coast. But they only have one tournament, and that is in Oregon. And that is a new tournament, relatively. That's the Winco Foods Portland Open. But other than that, they just don't hit the West Coast. So it's primarily based on the East Coast. They have their tour, depending on when it's played, they will have 144 or 156 players, because it depends on when it's played during the daylight savings and how much daylight they will have. So far, there has been, like I mentioned, only four tournaments: the Bahamas Great Exuma Classic that was played at the Sandals Emerald Bay, and the Bahamas Great Abaco Classic at the Abaco Club. There was also the Panama Championship, and now they're going to play the Club Colombia Championship this weekend. The first three tournaments, Sung Ye Im, which is the leader right now of the top 25, has been the revelation of the tournament. He won on that one, and then he won on the Great Exuma Classic, and then he finished second in the next one on the Great Abaco Classic. He just missed finishing T434 in Panama, but definitely the 19-year-old is on top of the leaderboards there, and the number one on the top 25. Number two right now is Canadian Adam Svensson, who has also two top 10 finishes. Number three is Scott Langley, who just recently won. He has played all three tournaments. My countryman, Rafael Campos, he's number four. Of course, the first three has been the winner so far in the first three tournaments. But Rafael Campos is the next one right now, fourth. He jumped from number nine to number four. Ryan Gibson, who had a very serious issue with his glove, the golf club, he just, not the glove, the cover, he threw it to his caddy. He had to apologize when he got a very mysterious penalty there in Panama. But he's right now number five. He dropped from number three. Carlos Ortiz, who won this automatic promotion 3 years ago, he's back here. Like I mentioned, some players, and Fred is going to talk a little bit more about the big names and not so big names and their rookies to watch. But Carlos Ortiz, he's one of this example of players that go up on the tour, do great here. They can do good on the PGA Tour, come back, and then they're just swinging from tour to tour. Edward Lord follows in the seventh place. Brett DeWitt is number eight. Steve Marino is number nine. Hank Lebioda is number 10. There is going to be another name, so I'm not going to mention them so that Fred can talk about them. But definitely, right now it's just three tournaments. They go all the way to the tour finals. And that's when the top 25 really get to play. I mean, all the first 100 players go against the ones that didn't make the 125 in the FedEx Cup, so in order to try to win those 25 cards that are going to be provided for the PGA Tour next year. But so far, Sung Ye Im definitely looks very good, good the part. Great player at just 19 years old. He's going to be 20 next month, but it's a great South Korean prospect. Maybe right now the best male prospect from South Korea to come. Adam Svensson from Canada playing well. And like I said, I expect a lot from Rafael Campos this year. So, Fred, tell us now about who to watch, some big names that are there, and what rookies are playing this year.
Yeah. And it's, and you know, the web.com's kind of a mix of old and young. I mean, it's a place for the young guys coming up to at least get a chance to play and prove themselves and learn a little bit more about becoming a professional golfer. But you've also got some older guys who are trying to hold on who couldn't quite keep their card, and so they need a place to play to get back to the regular tour. So you've got four big names: Stuart Appleby, Eric Compton, who we know has the heart issues, the double heart transplant. He just can't take the rigors of playing on the PGA Tour day in and day out like you need to. So he's playing a few events on the web.com tour. Brian Davis, who has had great success in the past, but again, he's getting a little advanced in age. Spencer Levine, who, I mean, he was runner-up at the Waste Management 1 year, I believe, played really well for 2 or 3 weeks there. So some big names come down, play on the Web.com Tour. You've got three former guys who are in the 48 and 49-year-old category who are getting ready for the Champions Tour. You got Frank Licklider, who was a solid player, never quite managed to get over the hump and become a really good player, but a really solid player for a long time. Sean McKeel, who won a major championship. He won the PGA Championship and when he stared down Tiger Woods at Medina. And then you've got Dickie Pride, who won the 1994 FedEx St. Jude in a playoff over Hal Sutton. So you've got these older guys from the PGA Tour that are down playing on the web.com. You've got some guys who finished outside the top 150 on the 2017 points list. You got Henrik Norlander, Kyle Reifers, Tad Ridings, Tim Wilkinson, Andres Gonzalez, who seems to always be bouncing up and down between the web.com and PGA Tour, Ryan Brehm, Brian Campbell, Stephen Alker, Gonzalo Fernandez Castaño, and then Brett DeWitt. So I'm going to mention a couple of names, and you'd already mentioned Carlos Ortiz. We've been watching him for a couple of years from Mexico, played college golf in Texas, made a splash when he won the three Web.com Tour events in 2014, moved up to the PGA Tour. He's back on the Web.com. He had a great tournament in the Bahamas. He's currently number 6, and he's in the top 25. So he's tracking to get back. Max Homa had an exceptional amateur career. He's currently number 12 in the top 25 and should make it up to the PGA Tour next year. He's one of the young guys to watch going forward. Carlos, I'm going to throw a name out at you here that you've probably not thought about or heard about, but it's been coming across my radar lately. Bo Hogue, he's currently number 18 in the top 25. He had a very solid year last year on the web.com. He only missed one cut, but only had one top 10. So he's been playing very well in Florida, may just be ready to break out and dominate on the web.com tour. I look for really good things from this kid. Oh, by the way, Hogue is from Ohio State, just in case you didn't know. And his grandfather... And his grandfather used to play with Jack Nicklaus. See, there you go. But watch his name. I just have a feeling about him. He's been coming across my radar lately, so that must mean something. And then a guy, too, that we've talked about in the past, Gonzalo Fernandez Castaño. He's in the top 25 right now. He has experience, and if he can get his game right, should be someone to watch this year on the web.com. So I like him. And then we've got this other young guy, and I think the world is going to be ready for him. He was a former world number one amateur, Curtis Luck. He's just mm-hmm. outside the top 25 right now. Let's start a little slow.
I was just going to mention him.
yeah, I beat you to it. Yeah. I expect him to win at least once or twice this year on the web.com. And if not, maybe 3 times and get bumped up. So I really do look for that. And if you look way down the web.com tour money list, there's a couple of curious names there. Brendan DeYoung, a former winner on PGA Tour, Casey Wittenberg, and Dowie VanderWaal. Wittenberg has never lived up to the high expectations we all had on him at a very young age. He's been, that name's been around forever. He just never quite was able to put it together. So Brendan DeYoung, of course, he's won on the PGA Tour. He's getting a little bit older now. He's probably getting, I don't check his age, but he can't be too far away from the Champions Tour probably now. But and Dowie VanderWaal has had a good career in Europe. So, it's a nice mix. You got Europeans, you got Latinos, you got old guys, you got young guys. The web.com tour is a little bit for everything, and I got a really good final thought here for you, Carlos, but I'm going to leave it at that, and maybe there's some guys that you want to mention that I missed.
I'm not sure if you mentioned Jason Gore there. That's playing here.
Oh,
again.
I did not. Yeah, and I meant to.
Jason Gore.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Is one. Yeah, that would be one that I would mention that I think you didn't. But Curtis Locke is the player. There are two names really, other than Carlos Ortiz, which I think he will make it and he will win one or two or maybe three again. He's just that talented. But I just wanted to mention Curtis Locke. I think he's going to be the guy here on the web.com tour this year. He hasn't gotten a good start to it, but I think he'll just get the hang of it, and you have to watch for him. Another player that I want to mention that has only played once this year, but he was a winner, he had a successful amateur career winning the Australian Amateur and individual and team events at the Eisenhower Trophy, and he just won not very recently there in Australia, is Cameron Davis. Watch out for him. He's just not ready to play the full season here. He just finished the season there in Australia, so now he's going to have a little more time to play here. He didn't do well in his first tournament, but that's another young guy that you have to watch out. He's just 22 years old. He bombs it off the tee, 6'3", 180. He's the thing, but hey, he can really play. Those are two names that I have for you there. Curtis Locke, Cameron Davis, and of course, I mean, the leader right now, Sung Ye Im, has been a real surprise. He seems very poised, and coming from South Korea, that could be the very big name to watch from South Korea on the male side. He's just 19. He's going to be 20, and I am going to be rooting for a lot for Rafael Campos. I'm telling you, he's going to win at least one this year on the web.com tour.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there, and I'm sorry I missed Jason Gore. I really meant to talk to him. He's one of my favorites. I've watched him. We had a chance to talk. If you remember, Carlos, I had a great interview with him in Fort Wayne when he was playing a web.com tour, and he'd earned his spot to get back to the PGA Tour for the next year. And he's a wonderful story. He's a working pro who had a flash year, and I love his story. You know, for the web.com tour, in all, there's a wonderful mix of young and old talent on the tour. But you know what, Carlos? The purses are pathetic. I know the goal is for these guys to make it to the big tour, but playing for $600,000 purses every week is just wrong. These guys are better than that. They're above that. The PGA Tour needs to fund these events better. They are getting TV money. What are they doing with it? Where is this money going? The PGA Tour needs to look at this as a developing their product for the future, like research and development investment. The pros simply need to make more money in these events. The regular events should be $1 million total purse. That's still only 1/6. Of what the big tour is paying, okay? With a $250,000 going to the winners. The final series, they should be bumped up at least a full million to $2 million. You know, they pay $1 million of those. They should be to $2 million. So there's four of them, 2, 4, 6, 8. I don't get it. I think they're just killing these guys. I mean, they're playing for peanuts with what it costs them to travel around and do what they need to do. I know they have some sponsors' money that helps them get by, but I really think they need to bump the money up for this tour. It should be more than this. I know the casual golf fan does not follow the web.com tour. I understand, but these guys are the future. Not everyone is a Jordan Spieth or a Justin Thomas or a Dustin Johnson or a Tiger freaking Woods. They have to learn how to be a professional, and this is the perfect tour for that. But they gotta pay him some money. It's just too low, Carlos.
Totally agree. The thing is, like you say, and like we talked about the women's last week on the topic is, if the show is not there, how are you gonna get the sponsors? And at the end of the day, that is what the sponsors are looking at. I mean, I know I'm not saying that they don't bring a good show, but right now they haven't had the exposure to it. That's a very doozy one, try to see how we can get those sponsors there. But hey, let's move on, close this, and that's something that we will keep talking about, the web.com throughout the year. We recap and we do the previews for it, so looking forward to seeing those players. Hope you enjoyed our take on the web.com tour for this year. Now let's take our final pods. I'm going to give you our take on some equipment roundup news. Tony Finau is the latest ping side knee. He with a multi-year endorsement requiring that he play at least 11 ping clubs. He put the ping G400 Max driver in play at the recent Sunny Open to go with a G403 wood and iBlade irons, which he used last week at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. So that's how he's complying with that request. So far, he's sticking with a set of Titleist Froakie wedges and a Pirelli putter, which he used last year after his Nike contract expired. So the latest pink side knee has been Tony Finau. Wesley Bryan, he took endorsements to a new level there in Scottsdale when he used a Callaway Chrome Soft Truvis ball, upon which Taco Bell logos were sprinkled. Wow, I mean, even to the ball now are getting the logos. Gary Woodland's victory Sunday at Phoenix made it 5 wins in as many weeks across the tours for the TaylorMade M3 and M4 drivers, including John Rahm, Dustin Johnson, and Jason Day on the PGA Tour. So the M3 and M4 drivers are hot right now on the trail. If somebody's using it, it might be the winner on the PGA Tour. Billy Horschel moved to the PXG's 0311T Gen 2 irons at Torrey Pines and capitalized with a first round of 66 at TPC Scottsdale, but those clubs aren't yet available in stores, so don't look for them, and they're going to be expensive when they come out. And to close, I'm going to say that Danny Willett's search for consistency continues. He switched to Callaway's X-Force Utility Iron there at the Maybank Championship in place of the Apex Woods he's been using. Unfortunately, so far, he hasn't flying it. Henrik Stenson moved to Callaway Rogue Sub-Zero Utility Wood with a 16.5-degree loft from the Rogue 4 wood that he used to have. And finally, Lee Westwood went to Pink Sigma G Time Potter in place of the Sigma G answer he used in Dubai after his second round of 64 in Malaysia. I think Fred is going to stay in the bag.
Yeah, I've got a couple things here, Carlos. Evidently, Thomas Bjorn, the European Ryder Cup captain, is trying to get his head right for the Ryder Cup later this year in France. The USA, with young guys Spieth, Thomas et al., are the overwhelming favorites. Although we have been telling our listeners the Euros are not to be taken lightly. They have their own cast of young, aggressive stars. But Bjorn has a new head cover for his driver that sports a picture of him smiling while hugging the Ryder Cup. I guess he's trying to channel those positive vibes into a win for the Euros. There's going to be a new amateur event on the Monterey Peninsula. If you think you're a pretty fair amateur golfer, want to play 3 of the most iconic golf courses in the world and have an extra $6,500, Pebble Beach has a new amateur tournament during the week of the U.S. Amateur at Pebble Beach in August. The dates will be August 16th through the 18th. The three courses are Pebble Beach, Spyglass Hill, and the links at Spanish Bay. It's going to be a two-person best ball, includes 3 nights at the inn at Spanish Bay and 3 rounds of golf, plus special amenities. If you want to know more, visit pebblebeach.com and look for the U.S. AM Challenge for that. And finally tonight, Carlos, Andrew Beef Johnson has decided to quit the beer. 2016 sensational feel-good European Tour golf story, Andrew Johnson took stock at the end of a very disappointing 2017 and has decided he has to cut back on the party life off the course. It's amazing, while the year's going on, you're off doing things and burning the candle at both ends, and you don't know what's happened until the season ends. But when I sat down and reflected on it, I said to myself, you know, it's time to keep quiet, keep disciplined, and get your head down. Wow, only took him a whole year to figure it out. It's been over 25 years for John Daly, and he still doesn't have a clue. Carlin, the Michigan Golf Journal, February issue came out today, features French Lick Resort, It features the Michigan Golf Course of the Year. It features University of Michigan, Michigan State, Central Michigan, Eastern Michigan, and Western Michigan golf teams. And there's a sit-down interview with the newest Hall of Fame member, Meg Mallon, who's from and lives in Michigan. And, oh, by the way, the February Ohio Golf Journal will be out next week. The January issue is still available on the website, ohiogolfjournal.com. And there's a new Back Nine Report TV on Roku, which features the top questions golfaholics are asking for 2018. And, Carlos, we once again want to thank our sponsors, Boyne Resort and French Lick, for their support of the show. Back to you, sir.
Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Brandel Chambly. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in also on Roku TV. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Have you ever wondered why some banks offer promotional savings rates that come crashing down after a few months? You deserve better. And when you bank with Capital One, that's exactly what you'll get. With a Capital One savings account, you'll get one of the nation's best rates that's not a promotional rate. Plus, you can open an account online in just 5 minutes. Welcome to Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet?
For consumers only. Offered by Capital One N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2017 Capital One.
Ready or not, here we fun. It's a whole new year of thrills at SeaWorld and Aquatica. New ways to soak, new ways to soar, and all new experiences in store. From high-speed water slides to a new Sesame Street party parade. Our most exciting year ever starts right now at SeaWorld and Aquatica San Antonio. Get two parks for one great price with a two-park flex ticket for only $69. Restrictions apply. See website for details.